things are also tense in Sudan. Police broke up student protests in the capital, Khartoum, today, and army units clashed in the southern town of Malakal, killing at least 9 people. And in Darfur, in the west of Sudan, hundreds of people are on the run after a recent surge in violence. Rebecca Hamilton is author of the new book, Fighting for Darfur, Public Action and the Struggle to Stop Genocide. She's just back from a reporting trip to Sudan and joins me in our studios in Boston. Thanks for being here. I mean, the big news out of this part of the world is Egypt this week, but it's interesting how much is actually going on in Sudan today. We'll talk more directly to Sudan in a moment, but for you, Rebecca, with Sudan right next door to Egypt, what are the implications for Sudan of Egypt, but also, you know, the other uprisings in the region?
I think it's got to be making the ruling regime in Sudan very nervous, because they know that in many quarters they don't have the popular support of the people. There were supposedly democratic elections last year, but they were neither free nor fair. And there are many in the north of the country who don't want to see this regime stay in power.
I mean, it's a delicate time for Sudan. The country is about to split in two after Southerners voted overwhelmingly last month for independence. Before the referendum, there were great fears of a return to civil war. What do you think the prospects are now?
I think the referendum went off incredibly well, successfully, peacefully, and there's no doubt that Southerners have voted for independence. The question is not only the viability of a new southern state, which is starting from a position where there's a population that's 85% illiterate, where there are only 40 miles of paved roads in the entirety of the country, but also what is the viability of the new northern state. At the moment, the northern economy is in a terrible situation. It's about to lose some significant share of the oil revenues when the south splits, and how long can it sustain this population if the economy goes south?
Now, Rebecca, your new book is about Darfur and specifically the U.S. advocacy movement to stop genocide there. Before we get to that movement, what's happening in Darfur today?
The situation in Darfur today is bleak. All of the causes that led to the massacres that we saw in 2003 and 2004 that captured global attention, all those factors are still in play. The people who perpetrated those massacres are still in power. There has been no accountability. There has been no compensation. There are 2.7 million people who are still in displaced camps who can't return to the land that they were forced to flee from. And whilst the international attention has been on the south, you've seen the government ramping up again its military campaign in Darfur.
Are there people dying? Are people getting killed?
Yes, people are dying. More than mass deaths, you're seeing mass displacement because people are scared. They don't feel secure. And the situation has become so much more complex than if we had got involved properly early on, because now, in addition to what are seen as the victim groups, the non-Arab groups in Darfur, the Arab groups themselves that were manipulated by the government to conduct some of these atrocities back in 2003, 2004, also feel like they're disenfranchised, they're turning against each other and against the government.
Well, that leads us directly to your book and what it's about. You've done some incredibly extensive reporting and also some soul-searching about what activists were able to achieve. You were yourself an activist for Darfur in the beginning. The movement on the surface seems to be a force for good, the movement to get around this genocide in Darfur from the United States. But how much did it complicate the reaction to the genocide, do you think?
Hugely complicated the policy response. There are dynamics that come with a mass outcry. They demand strong rhetoric from whoever they're targeting, which was in this case the U.S. government, and they push them to come out with rhetoric that consistently said Darfur is a genocide, very strong language. That could have been useful if they had the policy options to back that up. But the U.S. government was in many ways the worst placed government at this particular period in history.
And
geopolitically speaking, after the invasion of Iraq, Afghanistan, U.S. credibility was at an all-time low to be the one that was speaking out on human rights abuses. And so I think the theory of the movement had been coming out of a kind of 20th century analysis. If the U.S. gets out there in front and speaks on human rights, then the world will follow. In actual fact, the reverse happened when the U.S. got out in front and started talking about Darfur. It completely turned off the rest of the world from engaging in the issue.
Where do you think the Darfur activists in the States got it wrong and perhaps made things worse?
I think we, and I have to include myself in the start of this, were over-reliant on the analysis that we had been given of what had gone wrong in Rwanda. The genocide there in 1994 people who did the lessons learned writing from that came out with the conclusion that what was missing was an outcry from the American people. And it was a very, you know, post-Cold War analysis. If the American people just raise hell, then the U.S. government will do something and then this situation can be resolved. That was not the geopolitical reality at the start of the 21st century.
So today, trouble still in Darfur, in the north in Egypt, crisis, secession likely in the south of Sudan. That must build up a lot of pressure on President al-Bashir, and there's still that arrest warrant for the president. Where does this leave him? What's he going to do now?
At the moment, he's being promised an awful lot by the U.S. government to let southern secession continue. And, you know, the U.S. government is going to have to deliver on those promises. But that cannot wipe the slate clean for the ongoing human rights abuses in the north. And I think it's going to be a very tricky line for the U.S. government to walk, how to balance those things.
Rebecca Hamilton, author of Fighting for Darfur, Public Action and the Struggle to Stop Genocide. Thanks for coming in and speaking with us.
Thank you.
Check out our in-depth coverage of Sudan, including some amazing photos at theworld.org.